Previously on Unsolved.
There was definitely relationships that Father Kuntz had, sexual relationships with women and other parishioners that certainly can invoke a lot of emotion and is a very common motive for murder.
This guy was, he was just, he was no, there you go, noble in his cause. He never asked for any sexual favors or anything like this. The guy was a gentleman.
From the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, this is Unsolved, Season 3, The Devil You Know. I'm Gina Barton. In 1996, Father Alfred Kuntz started working to uncover the truth about allegations of Catholic priests who were committing sexual misconduct. On at least one of the cases he looked into, Father Kuntz teamed up with a grassroots organization called Roman Catholic Faithful. Father Kuntz joined this group shortly after it was founded. He and the founder, a man named Stephen Brady, started out investigating Daniel Ryan, who at the time was the bishop of Springfield, Illinois.
Bishop Ryan, it's now public, so there's no problem here, was an active homosexual picking up kids off the street for sexual favors. At that point, I'm the kind of person that can't leave something lay when I find out what's going on. When there's something that drastically wrong, being a father of seven, it hit home. So that's when Roman Catholic Faithful started.
By now, pretty much everyone knows the Catholic Church had a problem with sexual misconduct by priests. It's also pretty common knowledge that church leaders didn't deal with it very well. A lot of them tried to keep the allegations secret by moving priests around from one church to another without warning anyone about their past. But none of that really came to light until 2002, when the Boston Globe reported on it. Back in the 1990s, when Father Kuntz was working on his investigations, it was still a huge secret, and a lot of the church's leaders were still trying to cover it up.
And we were running into so many roadblocks. Father Kuntz once told me, he said, "Stephen, you'll find no justice in the church today."
By all accounts, Father Kuntz believed the Catholic Church had lost its way after Vatican II, which was a series of changes intended to modernize the church back in the 1960s. Part of Father Kuntz's disagreement had to do with what the church was teaching after that, and part of it had to do with the attitudes of everyday Catholics. Father Kuntz thought, for the most part, the people in the pews, the everyday Catholics, had much too casual of an attitude about sex. Here's Peter Kelly, who hosted the radio show Our Catholic Family with Father Kuntz.
Everything was changing, and a lot of people that are in the Catholic teaching business got it wrong since then. And that brought about a lot of confusion and a lot of intentional avoiding of the truth. You hear all these different priests and bishops and saying these things, but then you look at the books, which we still have, and they say something different. And that drove me crazy. But it was Father Al Kuntz that could explain what has happened. Because he was able to instruct me that, no, you don't. What you remember from your grade school days about Catholic teaching is still true. It's just that there are people that don't believe it and don't want other people to hear it anymore.
In some cases, Father Kuntz was hearing about priests who were buying into these more laid-back attitudes about sex. You know, hippies, free love, basically the counterculture of the 1960s. And a lot of those attitudes had persisted into the 1990s. Father Kuntz talked with Peter Kelly about those concerns on the radio show in 1997.
And then we look at the sixth commandment, the violation of the gift of sex or sexual powers in marriage or outside of marriage, with oneself or with another. These are mortal sins, something that no one likes to talk about because it has become such a blasé form of a self-expression today.
So when we hear people say, well, my parents are so old-fashioned, they think that living together is really a terrible sin, but in the 90s now, that's the way so many people do it. It's no longer a sin. That doesn't wash, because what is sin is always sin.
That's right. And for parents to show approval of that in any way is also a serious sin for them, mortal sin for them. And we have compromised in all of these areas that are very seriously wrong. We can take a look at the viewing of X-rated movies, or many times even R-rated movies. And then the trash that is surfaceable on internet today. These are deliberate mortal sins if people, in fact, contemplate viewing them for that purpose.
At the top of the show, you heard Stephen Brady talking about Bishop Daniel Ryan of the Diocese of Springfield, Illinois. And he said, it's all public now. He's right. But it took 10 years before that happened. Stephen Brady and Father Kuntz started compiling evidence against Bishop Ryan in 1996. And the Archdiocese didn't come out and say they'd had it right until 2006. The fact that it was so tough to get church officials to do anything is pretty much the reason why Stephen Brady and Father Kuntz met in the first place. Brady says he told another priest, Father John Harden, that he needed help from someone within the church. He needed someone who knew church law, which is called canon law, and someone who could tell him who to trust. Father Harden died in 2000, so I couldn't confirm this with him. But Stephen Brady says he went to see Father Harden around 1996.
So I went up to Detroit with my wife and family. We met with Father John Harden up there. He's up for sainthood right now, by the way. And he had a lot of Vatican connections, and he opened up his book of phone numbers. And one of the numbers he gave me was Father Alfred Kuntz. He said, Father Kuntz is the guy to go to if you need anything. If you need direction on canon law, if you need a contact, go to Father Kuntz in Dane, Wisconsin. There was no gray area with Father Kuntz, which is what I needed from a Catholic priest.
The first thing Stephen Brady did to try and confirm the allegations against Bishop Ryan was to hit the streets.
And a prostitute came forward, called me one night. My wife let me go pick her up on the wrong side of town and interview her in a party's parking lot. The beauty of it was that she had the names of all the young men on the street that she hung around with that were seeing the bishop.
He tracked down these young men. A lot of them were in prison by then. And he was convinced they were telling the truth about Bishop Ryan because they all had similar stories.
Four or five of them were in different Illinois prisons, which made it advantageous to me, because Illinois inmates can't communicate with one another. They all told me the same MO for the bishop, where he ate dinner, where he got his money, from which ATM, which alcohol he liked to drink. Each male prostitute I interviewed explained to me how to get in the elevator at the rectory, how to get up to his apartment, what the apartment looked like. I even got a description of the bishop's private parts, if you will, to put it delicately. And at that point, I knew I had the truth.
Father Kuntz tried to get someone within the church hierarchy to act on the information that Stephen Brady had found, but no one would. So in 1997, with Father Kuntz's support, Stephen Brady held a press conference.
There was so much corruption within the hierarchy that he was having trouble having any faith in following proper procedure. And he was backing my play, what I was doing publicly, as was Father Harden, even though it angered much of the hierarchy.
After that press conference, Roman Catholic faithful started getting calls from all over the country. At the same time, even though they were getting a lot of pushback from church leaders, Father Kuntz and his best friend, Father Charles Fiore, were building cases against other priests.
But these individuals within the church, the corrupt individuals, they're not really the church. They're imposters that have found their way into the church through lying and stealing and thieving, if you will. And Father Kuntz, as I did, wanted to help clean it out. He was a fighter. And he was working on a lot of cases, I found out from him, on priests that needed help or homosexual problems within the church. And he was very active in that sense.
Here's Matt Abbott, a Catholic commentator who has been writing about Father Kuntz's murder for years.
There was also talk that Father Fiore and Father Kuntz were working on a dossier of some sort to present to Rome regarding some of the clerical corruption that was going on in the U.S. It was always thought by some that there was a connection. And my initial thinking of, you know, the Kuntz murder was that there very well could have been a connection with that. And that's kind of the angle that I was looking at first, that, my gosh, you know, here on the surface you think you have, oh, what a bunch of holy men. And then underneath the surface you have, you know, a lot of dirty things going on. And that added another element of intrigue to the Father Kuntz murder investigation.
Stephen Brady says people tried to intimidate the members of Roman Catholic faithful to try to get them to stop their investigations.
I had three death threats, actually. That's why we put an alarm system. Well, we put an alarm system on the house after Father Kuntz was murdered. But one death threat I received, a businessman from New York I knew sent me an email, said, "Steve, have you seen this?" He got an email from a priest in Florida that said I was marked for assassination. It was a priest I had investigated. That one, the FBI looked into and wanted all the information I had on it. What conclusion they came to or where they went with it, I'm not sure.
Morris Smith, who attended St. Michael Church and considered Father Kuntz a friend, told me he had confided in her that he'd gotten threats, too. Remember, Maura is the waitress who served in the Marines and says she has the gift of la presciencia, which allows her to see visions of the future and to sense danger. She told me she had a conversation with Father Kuntz in his office one day.
He says, "Do you feel anything, Maura? Do you feel anything?" He was asking me. Because he was nervous. He says, "Do you feel anything? Do you see anything?" I go, "Why?" He says, "I was just wondering if you got any visions." And I said, "What's going on?" He's like, "What's wrong, you know, Father Kuntz?" And he says, "I've been receiving threats." I said, "What do you mean? Who's threatening you? I'm going to kick their butt. Who is threatening you? I'm going to jail for this. Because I'm going to whoop up on somebody. They're going to know a woman, Marie. Just whooped up on them." Anyways, he says, No. He says, I've been receiving threats in higher places.
She says he opened his desk drawer to show her something.
He pulls out and he has a bunch of letters and it has the emboss. It's like a gold seal and in the back it's a Vatican. It's the Vatican. It's embossed. This paper is the authority of whatever that is. I looked at him like, "What's this?" And he goes, "Read it." In that letter, it was telling him to remain silent, to not bring to light any more of what he's, they were very careful in wording what they had in this letter, but it was basically telling him that he needed to stop what he was doing and that they would take care of it. And I'm like, "Take care of what?" Here's a question. I said, "I don't understand these letters. They're obviously threatening you." They said that this is his last and final warning. So I'm thinking, what's going on? And he starts going off. Now I'm seeing a different side of my priest. He's all nervous and he says, "There are people in the church that don't belong, that they're priests that should not priests, that they're pedophiles, that they were a scourge upon the Catholic Church, that they were ruining everything, that they were sinners, they were using the church as a mean, a vehicle to do their evil."
Maura Smith says that after Father Kuntz was murdered, she told the police about the letters, but they didn't believe her.
I told the detectives this, and they're like, "Oh, you're fabricating that." I'm like, "Yeah, oh, sure. Like, I'd make it up. Put me on a lie detector." And it's like, it'll show them, telling you the truth. It's like, I held those papers. I read those papers, and those papers threatened him. According to them, the detectives, everything in his office was taken out. Like, they stripped his office. They dug through everything. This is what the detectives told me. "There was no letters. We searched for letters." But then I said, "Yeah, but you also admitted that somebody went in there. It was like a hurricane. that they were searching for something. They were searching for something.
As you heard in the previous episode, Maura Smith later became a suspect in Father Kuntz's murder. Don Johnson was the detective who supervised the whole investigation for the first 2 years or so. I told her what Maura had said about the letters.
That would be the first time in the world that she's ever mentioned that.
Stephen Brady and Don Johnson both told me the police pursued that angle, that Father Kuntz's murder may have been tied to the work he was doing to hold deviant priests accountable, including Bishop Ryan. Not long after the murder, detectives showed up at the pizza place Brady's family runs down in southern Illinois.
There were several officers that came down, several detectives. They wouldn't say for sure if they thought it was church-connected, but they were definitely looking into that possibility. Specifically, they wanted to know what files Father Kuntz had of mine. They wanted to find out what was missing. And they asked me about our conversations, what he was working on. And I told them what I could. It took about 4 hours, and then they moved on to interview other folks.
He says after the detective spoke with him, they moved on to some of the people involved in the Bishop Ryan case.
Then they wanted to see one of our witnesses for the Ryan case, Frank Bergen. So our attorney got them permission through the prison to go to the prison and interview Frank Bergen. From my understanding, they wanted to go speak with Bishop Ryan himself, which they did.
I told Don Johnson about my conversation with Stephen Brady.
He says that a couple of detectives actually came down there and talked to him.
Yeah.
And actually talked to Bishop Ryan.
Yeah,
too.
Well, I think more than once. I think we talked to Ryan more than once.
There was also this rumor going around that Father Kuntz had a list of sexually abusive priests and that he was planning to read it on his radio show. Maura Smith says Father Kuntz told her about that list.
So he told me that there were priests, and he told me that he had a list of names of priests that all had conduct on becoming a priest that were believed suspect or were in fact pedophiles, and that he wanted to give the list to the police department and let, he says, these men deserve to be excommunicated and they belong behind bars. And that if the church was too cowardly to do it, he was going to do it himself.
Peter Kelly tells me Father Kuntz had worked with Father Fiore to put together a list, but there were no plans to broadcast it. He says the two priests were trying to tip off church authorities who they thought might be likely to act on it.
So they were very much in the know about how horrible this all was and was going to get worse. And people weren't even believing it at that time that this could be as bad as it was. I knew that there was a long list of names that Father Fiore had of sexually abusive priests. Long list. And he gathered it from a number of sources. And I think both Father Kuntz and Father Fiore worked together to try to feed information.
Dawn Johnson told me she could never eliminate the possibility that someone within the Catholic Church killed Father Kuntz. And even though Maura Smith's DNA didn't match anything found at the crime scene, Dawn still didn't feel like she could cross Maura off the list of suspects because of all the strange things she said.
She admitted to us that she had been in his apartment in the school, and we asked her to describe it, and it wasn't right. His place was trashed, and she wasn't describing it right. However, she was putting herself inside there, which we thought was weird. We just really doubted that that was true. But she kept wanting to put herself. She put herself in the sacristy.
How did she do that?
It was, once again, it was like she was in there and he was giving her money or something like that. And she was talking to him like he was giving her advice. But we just really, again, didn't buy it because he just didn't do that with people. So she kept putting herself in every aspect of his life. She's his waitress.
Don Johnson also thought some of the things Maura Smith was saying about her dreams and visions could be potential clues. The detective wanted to get more information from her, and so she decided the best way to do that would be to ask for Maura's help as a psychic on the case.
I wanted to give her the benefit of the doubt to be a psychic. If she is a psychic, I'll take your information. I'm hard up, right? And if you're not a psychic, you're going to confess to a crime through being a psychic because you see that on TV many, many times. Oh, I had a dream, and it's blah, blah, what happens? So I humored her, and we did a seance in her apartment. We did a channeling seance candlelight thing and obtained some information.
Did Father Kuntz show up?
No. She was doing it all in the, I have a vision, I'm there. I'm this floating being there, and I can see everything that happened. That's what she's claiming.
The police also took Maura Smith to St. Michael's School and asked her what her psychic visions could tell them about the crime.
And so we did some stuff with Maura where she was walking barefoot and stuff, and as she was walking, she was telling us heat sensations and visions of what the perpetrator looked like and blah, blah, blah.
Dawn Johnson says Maura Smith seemed to know things that hadn't been released to the public, like the fact that talk radio was blaring at the time of the murder.
She's at the crime scene in this vision, and there's this loud TV on. Well, anybody would think it was a TV. It was talk radio. It didn't sound like a radio. She also walked down the hallway and talked about, you know, seeing this little red light where she was hiding is in her vision and watching this whole thing. And there is a closet that the perpetrator had to walk by in that has a little tiny red light in it. So, you know, there was some stuff she said that was so close to home and so accurate.
Okay, this is going to sound like a dumb question, but do you think it's possible that she actually is a psychic?
You know, if you talk to her about everything that she's ever predicted, you know, she's predicted every monsoon tidal wave. She's predicted, you know, buildings toppling over. I mean,
she told me she predicted 9/11.
Yeah, see, I mean, you know, when you predict 9/11, you should kind of talk to somebody beforehand. I mean, I can say I predicted 9/11, too, after the fact. So, I mean,
but she didn't have the specifics to warn anybody. She saw buildings falling, but she wasn't exactly sure where or when.
She said she saw Quince's death before he died. She should have warned him, but she's pissed at herself. She knew it was going to happen, and she told other people that. I think even at the diner that day, you know. I'm just, yeah, she could have possibilities there. It's possible. But, well, I don't think so.
Next time on Unsolved.
He was just kind of a strange individual. The setting, the lights were kept real low. There was no lights turned on in the room. It was just kind of gloomy in there. It smelled musky and just strange. But he went on to talk about different weird theories about what happened, and he made the gesture of taking his finger and drawing it across his neck and basically saying that he had a thought that chances are Alfred Kuntz was being cut ear to ear.
And I remember him insisting that he was absolutely convinced that Father Kuntz was killed by Luciferians, you know, Satanists.
Unsolved is reported, written, and produced by me, Gina Barton. Our sound engineer and videographer is Bill Schultz. Photographer, Mark Hoffman. Artist, Lou Saldivar. Web designers, Aaron Coy and Andrew Malika. Our editor of local news and investigations is Greg Borowski. Our copy editor is Debbie Davis. Our theme music this season was composed by Evan Johnson. I also want to thank Donna Billmeyer, Miles Moffitt, Ashley Lutheran, Meg Jones, Tom Ketting, Rachel Piper, Emily Risto, Anissa Johnson, Rick Wood, Brian Kranz, Joe Hanneman, Elena Weissman, and Taylor Palmby for their help this season. More information, along with photos and video, can be found on our website at jsonline.com/unsolved. And please support local journalism. You can subscribe to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel at jsonline.com/deal. Thank you.